Hello, I'm Erica McIntyre, Content Director for Jason's Connection. Today, Jason's Connection founder, Jason Harris, will speak with Bieke Kreps. Ms. Kreps is a pediatric dentist in private practice in Belgium, a scientific researcher at the University of Leuven, and a visiting lecturer at NYU. She was born with a bilateral cleft lip and palate, which led her to want to help other people by working in the medical field.
Can you talk about cleft palates and cleft lips? What is the difference between them and how are they treated?
A cleft lip is only like an opening in the lip, and a cleft lip and palate, you have the opening in the lip and the palate, but you can have it in separate forms, like you can only have a cleft lip or only have cleft palate, or you can have it both. And it is repaired with surgery. They just close the opening when children, I think when they are only have a cleft lip, it's when you are 4 to 6 months years old and month old, and when they restore the palate, it's most of the time when they are 2 years old.
And can you talk about your own experience with this as someone who's had it, but also somebody who works in that field?
As a patient, I have a lot of surgeries also because I was born 29 years ago, and then at that time they did a lot of surgeries. Now you see that patients have less surgeries, and it's also much more beautiful restored. You also see that the patients need a lot of less revision surgeries, so it's much better now than 29 or 30 years ago. So it's still evolving, and we are in new time, and you see new better surgeries too, and the surgeons have also much more experience. So the children who are born now get better surgeries than like children who were born 10 or 20 years ago. Which is good.
You are a pediatric dentist. How did you choose this line of work? And can you talk a bit about what you do as a pediatric dentist and also a researcher?
During my last years of, during my education, my last years in dentistry, I got the opportunity to do my thesis on craniofacial teams. The last years of my dentistry education, I went to the craniofacial team of the University of Ghent, where I studied every month. So, and I followed the team members and also the dentist who was a pediatric dentist over there, and working with these kids kind of triggered me that I also want to do some working with kids as a dentist. And during my internship as a dentist, I did it partly in the university also on the pediatric dentistry department, and after 1 month I knew that I want to become a pediatric dentist, so I applied for the master's and I got accepted, and I really love the job. I love working with kids. I would never want to be a general dentist anymore. I think if I have to be general dentist, I think I would stop with dentistry, because working with the children is really something I want to do. And also, my job as a pediatric dentist is much more than doing dentistry. It's working with the kids. Also, I see a lot of children with big medical issues, having cancer, having syndromes, other disabilities, and it's much more than dentistry. It's also much more medical, which is something I really wanted to do, because I hesitated a long time to study medicine or dentistry. So I'm actually glad that I can do both. And I think you also working with kids give me much more than working with adults. Get so much back of them. And also, because I only see the difficult children, I have a referral practice, so you only get referred when they have problems, when the dentists don't when it's too difficult for them. So it's kind of really challenging to do it. So, and I love kids, so that's why I chose for pediatric dentistry.
Wow, thank you. You also teach students at NYU. What is it like interacting with students who are only a couple years younger than you? Or
yeah, and some of them are even the same age as me. I was lucky that during my master's of pediatric dentistry, I did a lot of research. I also went to a couple of conferences. I love the combination of doing research and also doing the clinical part. And because I did quite a lot of research, I published also a couple of papers. They asked me also to teach. At first, I teach a little bit in Belgium. But because I got the opportunity to go to the States, because I really want to see how they work in the States, and they asked me over there if I want to give some lectures about the research that I did and that I still do. So it's really nice to interact with the students in New York, because I think there's a lot of more interaction there. There's another way of teaching over there too. I think it's much better than we had in Europe. There's also, I think, more people talk more, and there's also a lot of more respect, and they are really curious too, so it's really nice. I love working over there. So.
And do you see the differences in the practice of pediatric dentistry with people with disabilities, or just in general? How do you see that as different over than Europe than here in the States?
There is a difference. I think you can't compare Europe as Belgium, because Belgium is so small, and we don't see a lot of people with disabilities. I think when you go like to the UK, you see a lot of more dentists who work with them, and also in the States. I think it's much better in the States than like in the UK or Scandinavia, and how they work with people with disabilities. There's also a lot of more structure around it. So I think, and also the pediatric dentists here in Belgium, a lot of pediatric dentists still don't like to work with people with or children with disabilities. They are sometimes scared of it. And I think in the States, it's when I see the pediatric dentists working over there, they really like to work also with the patient with disabilities. And I think it's important when you choose pediatric dentistry, you also have to work with the patients with the disabilities. It's a part of the education and the job. So.
We actually met you through, and you're associated with somebody who we've interviewed before, Rick Guidotti. Can you talk about what you're doing with him, or any projects that you have upcoming that you're doing with him?
Yes, I met Rick in October, last October in 2014, after I went to a conference in Berlin, I already had the idea that I want to make a book about children, adolescents, and adults with craniofacial differences, actually to show other people, like man on the street or like doctors, to see people with differences in another way and also see the beauty of it. Not because you're different, you're not beautiful, and you have to see the whole person, not only looking at the difference. I think it's also important to educate doctors and nurses and other people in the medical field too, that they are like exposed in another way to people with differences, that they see them, that they also interact with them in another way. Most of the time they only see like the difference, and they just talk about that, and they don't see the person in total. And I had it when I was a patient too, with some doctors that I was sometimes horrible. I was just crying. They were just talking about how bad I looked and all the other things. And that's what we want to do with the project too, change how people see and show them the beauty of to everyone. Also educate little children in schools that they just learn about it, and that they know how they can talk about it, what things they can ask to the children or the adolescents or the adults. I think it's actually a project that we want to involve everyone, and want to do it worldwide, because in every other part of the world, like in Africa or in Asia, you see like a lot of not restored craniofacial differences, and it's also another perception of having a difference over there. So I think it's important that you see craniofacial difference are very different, but you also have it over all the world. So I think it's important that we show it that it exists everywhere. It actually exists a lot, like a lot of children are born with it. So I think it's important that people are exposed to it and that they know about it, and just that they change. We just want to change how people see, and it's also with other difference too, like with children Down syndrome or other, or like a physical disability. I think people, we are coming now to a time that it really has to be discussable, and also the what is beauty. I think the definition of beauty actually doesn't exist. I think everyone is beautiful and just deserves his or her own spot in the world. So that's what we want to do.
You can go ahead if you have. Sorry if I interrupted you.
No problem.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting with even thinking about that, because some of the stuff that you showed us and the links that you gave us, I didn't realize there was adult groups out there for people and other things. You think about this as only kids, but a lot of people, this is something that keeps happening even if they get the surgeries and stuff, and I thought that was really something that opened my eyes up.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, you have worked all over the world. Can you talk about this, and where are some of your favorite places you've been, either for work or travel?
Yeah, actually I traveled a lot. I went to Mexico too, but that wasn't for volunteer work, it was just for traveling. Now I travel a lot to conferences. I will be in LA during the Special Olympics, where I normally will talk about craniofacial differences too. I traveled to Africa, but it was more for a holiday, but over there I did some volunteer work too, and I unfortunately I got sick over there, and I did quite a lot of countries in Europe. I just love traveling and just seeing other people, get in touch with new people, and I hope to do, normally I will do a mission this year to Peru or Ecuador, and also for craniofacial, for children with craniofacial differences. So I hope that we can, I always love traveling, but I hope I can do now more of traveling also, because it really has a purpose now too, that for the craniofacial differences project, so, and also to talk at conferences and to dentists or doctors about craniofacial differences, and also about other issues in the pediatric dentistry too. But I think normally now it will be much more focused on craniofacial differences.
And what type of, you talk about you want to go to a lot of different conferences and stuff. What do you do when you're on like regular vacation, like when you went to Mexico, is there particular things you like, oh, I have to, is this stuff I definitely want to see, or is there, you know, people you, is there particular things that you like when you go on trips, you're like, is this what I want to do?
Yes, I like to I always go backpacking, so I like to just talk about with local community, going to the nature, discovering lots of things, going to museums, doing sports, and just seeing how the local people are living over there. I never go for luxury. I just go for enjoying and just kind of smelling how everything is over there, and just seeing a lot of things. I get up early in the morning and I go late in bed, so my days are always very busy, but I think that's the way you can see and learn also a lot about other cultures.
Now, you talked about it a little bit, but when you were in Africa, you got gastroparesis. Can you tell us what is gastroparesis? How did you find out that you had it, and what treatment is there for it, and how does it affect your daily life now?
Yes, Gastroparesis is actually the emptying of the stomach is too slow. Actually, I had it. I had three events. After when I got back from Africa, I got a gastric infection, but also a perionephritis, a revision surgery for my cleft lip and palate, and also mononucleosis. It was like four big things in 3 months' time. It was a bit too much for me. And first, I had a lot of problems with my bowels and my stomach. They thought I had Crohn's disease. They thought I had gluten. But after, because then the further problems were more focused to my bowels. But then I had much more problems with my stomach. I had hard to digest things. Sometimes I had to throw up. And after some investigations, then they saw that my stomach was emptying too slow. I think the working of my stomach was only 20% or something. First, I could eat like a little bit warm, but like small amounts of food. But it kind of, although I got medication for it, it kind of got worse and worse. And at the end, I hardly could eat, like, I only could eat cold things and like crackers or yogurt and all the other things. Every time I ate them, after 3 hours, I had to throw up. So I hardly digested anything. I had a lot of go to the hospitals, but it wasn't that easy to find out what I had, because it was like a mix-up problem, first the bowels, but when the focus was like much more on my stomach, they found out I had gastroparesis. They thought it would help like with medication, and also they placed a tube, so got tube feeding at night. And that they told that after 6 months the problem would be resolved, but unfortunately it wasn't, and the situation was getting much worse that actually after 3 years they removed my stomach, and that's actually the worst case scenario that can happen with a gastroparesis, or is see that the situation resolves and that it gets better, but in my case, unfortunately, it didn't got better, and it affected my life. I was so glad that I still worked. The doctor sometimes said, oh, you have to stop with working. It's like too exhausting for you. But it was the only thing that made me like happy, and that I could still be there for other people and I could do my work because I love my job. But I also got, in Belgium, it's like going out for dinner and eating is like something very big in our culture. And you feel like, I still went out to restaurants, but always had to ask for a dessert. And yeah, sometimes they were looking like strange to me because I was only eating dessert, but I couldn't hold any other food. So, and you feel some like kind of exclusion too, because sometimes your friends are afraid to ask you out because they know you have all the problems. I also, during that time that I had to tube feeding, I couldn't travel that far, so I couldn't travel like transatlantic. So most of the time I did like short trips and always in Europe. So it really affected my life that time. But because I'm wasn't so sick, I also, it was like such a big part of my life that period that I missed the other things, like being able to eat, because I was someone who like ate all day and ate so much, and it hurt, especially when like my friends or other people were talking about dieting, and sometimes I got tears in my eyes, and I just was thinking about, just be happy that you can eat. I can hardly eat, and I would do everything to eat. It was a big part, and actually having this kind of, then I saw my facial difference in another way too. Then I thought, oh, it's only this difference. What I'm having now is like something much worse, and I can even die of it, because 2 years ago the situation was so bad that it was deciding to do the operation, to do the surgery, to remove the stomach, or just or just die because I hardly had any energy, and I just felt like the week before I had the surgery, I really thought every night I went to sleep, I was just thinking, oh, I will never get be awake again. So I at that point, I didn't have any choice. So, and I'm lucky that I survived, although the complication. But yeah, if I look back and people ask, would you, if you knew it, would you go to Africa? I think I would still do it, but I would never change something that happened, because it's also changed me, everything that happened, to the person that I am now. So, and I'm just very glad that I survived everything, and I just hope that now I just even want to do much more for other people, although I already did it, but I just want to give something back also for still being alive. So, and I hope that in a way it can help other people too, that you never have to give up, although you have like a lot of issues, and sometimes it's that life is really hard, but you always have to see that little light shine and just go through it and never give up, and hope that it will turn back good, and if you're lucky, it turns good. But some people don't have the are not lucky and don't have the chance that it turns back good. So I'm just so happy. So, and I just enjoy the little things, like seeing a smile or seeing the sunset. I'm happy with really little things now, and I just hope that I can give something back. Although I still have to live with the consequences too of having the gastroparesis. There are some things I will never be able to have, or where I still have to be very careful or too, but I can live a normal life. And after being through all of this, I'm just happy with the things I have. And I think it's everyone have to see that. You just be happy with the things you have. Don't look back to the past. Don't just look now to the present. So, yeah, that's a bit what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Do you ever get it to where people think, oh, well, you just don't want to eat, or oh, you're trying to be skinny when you don't eat a lot, or are people pretty accepting of it, or?
Yes, you get like a lot of prejudice. People think you're skinny or like having anorexia or something. But a lot of people who are like skinny, I know like people with Crohn's disease often are also very skinny. So a lot of girls and women have like anorexia. So they think, oh, you're skinny, you're having anorexia. And when they asked me, sometimes they really asked me just in a face, and I was like with tears, and I was just saying, yeah, I'm not having anorexia. I'm really ill, and I'm living with a tube too, because I had a tube and it was also out of my stomach. So I never showed it to people because I was a bit ashamed of it. I always wear like t-shirts that so were like a little bit bigger, so we couldn't see it. But when I was seeing myself in the mirror, I was just crying because I was so skinny. And every time I was, they had to weigh me, I was just crying. I just wanted to gain weight, and I was already very skinny. I've always been. I have like a fast metabolism, so I always had to eat so much to stay on weight. And it was actually a disadvantage already, because I was losing much easier weight also because of having the gastroparesis. And I think it's just seeing someone and already saying, oh, because she's skinny or because she's like having something else, they already say, oh, she has anorexia. They just judge you without knowing your story. And I think also when you see cancer patients, some of them are also very skinny or a little different, and without the people still having their hair, sometimes they also judge with those bad reactions. So it's the same with craniofacial difference. So I had the reaction when I was still young and had, you really could see that I had a facial difference. And now I had it again, but just because I was skinny and they were judging again, so it was hard. I had like a scar on my, a lot of scars on my belly and in my face, but also a lot in on my heart, because it really affects you psychologically, because you just want to look normal, but it just, you can't, and you would do everything for it. And I'm just glad that now you hardly can, I have my weight back and I look normal. But when I see people like judging other people, I get sometimes angry. You don't have to judge someone without knowing their story, or it's not because someone is different. You never know what's behind the difference. So, yes. But I think a lot of people who are ill and who are different have those problems.
I think that's a really good point and a really powerful point that you brought with some, with the really nice stories. What are some of the, I mean, that you like culture so much, what are some of the most important things you have learned from other cultures?
How they interact with each other, because you see in other, in a lot of different cultures, how people like their eating culture, but also how they are, how they kind of respond to other people, how they are to other people. Like when you go to South America, Latin America, people are like much more open, much nicer. I think a lot of like differences and other things are also a bit more accepted. I even see it when I go to the States. I think in the States people are a bit more open, and in Europe they say people in States are kind of superficial, but I think I like more the way of how people are to each other in the States than like in Belgium, because in Belgium people are really close, are hardly say hello to other people, won't help you. There's a lot of jealousy too, and you see it in some other countries too in Europe. And I think when you go to America or to Australia, you see that people are much more open. And also how the way they are to other people. I think that's nice to see the differences. Also when you go to Africa, it's totally different. Also the way of living, like the men hardly work, they are just sitting under the tree and drinking tea. There's really, it's like time has stopped several years over there. And when you go back like to Europe or to the States, when you just went to Africa, it's like kind of a shock. Also coming to Africa is like a shock, because the way people live is totally different. We have like everything over there. They are just, they don't have a lot, but they are also happy. So and that's nice to see, that I think you also appreciate much more because we are living in a wealthy state. We have everything. We can have healthcare. We can, the things we want, we just can buy. And I think seeing different cultures, just, and you just take of it what you want, what you find nice. So I think it's good for people to see how people live in other cultures. And I think it's also broad, gives you a bigger view, a better view of the world, and also how you can stand in your life. And I think that's very nice.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Seeing other people, whether it's somebody with a different abilities or appearance or even culture, well, being able to empathize with them and sort of learn their experiences can be really helpful to being able to relate to them better. You're very, very young, but already so accomplished. What motivated you to do so much?
I think it's part of my personality. And when I was already young, I also always wanted to do a lot. I did a lot of sports too when I was younger, and sometimes my parents have to stop me that I have to. I've always been very active, and I think being growing up also with having a craniofacial difference, I always thought I had to like do much more for other people too, and also because I wanted to be accepted as being me, and that's also, I think it's kind of a drive that gave it to me, and also because of being ill, like having the gastroparesis, I just want to do so much more, and I'm just, I know that for everyone, life can stop at any time, so I think you just have to live now, and having those two things kind of triggered me to do even more, and it's also a part of my personality too, so I hope I can realize much more too with the project, because that's actually a dream, and I think it's even more important than my work as a pediatric dentist, so I hope I can realize it, and also meeting all those wonderful people like you and your family, it's so nice, and it gives me like so much energy too. I'm lucky that I don't need too much sleep, so I can do a lot during the day. But those things just give so much energy. Just meeting all those nice people, and who are doing so much and such great things. And I was lucky, like the last year, so much happened and. And it gives me like so much more energy. So I just hope that I can, and I do everything for it, and just to realize even more, and still enjoying life every day. So.
Yeah, it was actually really nice to meet you. I'm going to tell a little bit of this. My father actually met you first. He was meeting with Rick, and you were at his studio, and you were there at the same time. And apparently you two really hit it off talking to each other. So that night, it was in New York City. We went out to dinner all together, and it was amazing talk. I thought we had an amazing talk all together.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you have very limited free time, but what do you like to do for fun?
For fun, I'm now doing a lot of yoga. Actually, a couple of months ago, I started again. And actually, I really love it, because it kind of also, my body got like, after being so ill, and it really helped like for my mind, body, and soul. Kind of, I just feel much better when I'm doing yoga. So I do it every day. I also So I practice it really a lot, and I'm running also a lot, and I did it a lot before I got ill. I'm doing creative things too, and I'm dancing too again. I used to do it at a high level, and now I'm doing it again. Because I'm able to do it, because when I was having the gastroparesis, I wasn't able to do all those sports, so. And now I'm sporting a lot, and I think yoga is now actually one of the most important things that helps me too, going to, sometimes I have like stressful days at work, and it kind of de-stresses me too, and also being creative, like I like to cook too, taking pictures, going to museums, I have like a lot of interests, so and just going on a city trip and traveling. I think doing so much different things also makes everything interesting.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think for everyone that they just have to enjoy life and see that life is so beautiful, and when there are problems and when they have issues, just never give up and always try to see the positive things in life, and try to surround you with people who love you, and just go for it.
Thank you so much, and we would love to share your project when it comes out, the photo project at Jason's Connection, if you're interested, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you, Jason.